or electric, it can still melt your face. It's 90.5 WASU FM Boone and WASURocks.com.
Comes down to this. 6 seconds to play in Super Bowl 34.
McNair drops, throws right side for Dyson. He dives for the end zone.
Didn't make it.
He came up 1 yard short.
Down the middle, James, the lateral to the corner of the end zone. Can you believe that?
As Boone hits it to deep left, that might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Boise State for the win. They hand it off to Johnson. Boise State has won the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl. Can you believe it?
Chalmers for the tie.
Got it with 2 seconds.
They're going to kick the field goal. It'll be Jason Gingell out of the hole to Mesko. Good snap. Good hold. And the kick is blocked. Appalachian State has stunned the college football world.
Last time on Sports Out the Wazoo.
At this point in the tournament, do you like the Cinderella story and see them ruining somebody's chances, or is it getting old?
Obviously, you want to see four of the best teams go at it against the nation, but you don't want to see them just go completely through the tournament, and then it's just like, okay, it's just the big boys. There's not that team that you really feel like you can root for.
Nobody wants to see chalk, and here's what I'm saying. I think in the early rounds of the tournament, all the way up to the Sweet 16, maybe even up to the Elite Eight when you think about a Davidson team, nobody in this country cares about Davidson. They care about Davidson when they're winning in the early few rounds, and it's a cute story and it's fun. But there's a reason these teams are powers.
And welcome to Sports Out the Wazoo, sponsored by Capone's, located across from the Turchin Center. 265-1886 is the number for Capone's. Brandon, Chris, Blake, Justin, and we've got a jam-packed show. We're going to be previewing Major League Baseball. The season's just around the bend, starting up on Easter. A little controversy around that, believe it or not. We've got NFL talk. We're going to be talking about the Steelers coming up. Steve Smith, his latest comments might come as a surprise to you. And, of course, NCAA. But we'll start off in NCAA, Chris and Blake. And, guys, with the way the Final Four is kind of shaped up, obviously we talked about it on Monday, not your usual Final Four, not the glamorous Final Four, not all number one seeds are there, not a lot of Cinderellas. There's quality teams, but not the Cinderella team. I guess Butler has to take that phrase or whatever. But when you look at this Final Four, what stands out to you guys as far as who do you think is going to win, first of all, and second of all, how are these games going to be played? Are they going to be more defensive oriented or offense? Because if you watch Butler, they have played solid defense, but it's been always high-scoring games. Yeah. They're going up against a Michigan State team that does nothing but knockdown, drag-out defense. You look at the other end, Duke knows how to score the ball, but they've been defending well. But you look at West Virginia, they know how to defend very well as well, but they've been scoring a lot of high offensive games.
You know what? I think both of them are going to be defensive struggles. I'd be surprised if both of these games get out of the 70s. I think they'll be in the high 60s, low 70s for both games. And to me, I think the two teams that are going to survive and are going to end up playing each other are coached by the two guys we were talking about last show, and I think that's going to be Izzo and Coach K. I see Michigan State posing some opposition to Butler, mainly because I don't like going. I know people say, "Oh well, Butler, they've done what they've had to do, and there's not a real weakness on this team." You're right. There's not a real weakness. They are very capable.
That's why they're in the Final Four, though.
They're very capable of winning this whole thing. They could win the championship. I wouldn't be surprised. They're that good. They're capable of doing that. But at the same time, when you get to this point, the same is true of the team on the other side. And I think Michigan State, if they're smart enough to bang it down low, and with Draymond Green, and I think they will be, I think that their versatility, their athleticism in terms of matchups, not overall athleticism because they don't have a ton of really versatile players, but compared to Butler, and I think their size down low and their strength and their power, if they exploit that, Butler can't stop it. They really can't. I think Butler can hang with them. I'm not saying that they're going to blow out Butler because I don't see that. And on the other game, with Duke and West Virginia, I know West Virginia is going to run that 1-3-1 zone again because they're going to try and keep Duke out on the perimeter, try and force Duke to knock down three-point shots. And as we've seen, if Duke can't knock down the three, can they win? Throughout the year, they have at some points. At this point in the year, can they? Zubac, he didn't have a great game the last go-out. So I don't know if you can lean heavily on a guy like that, but I like Coach K's chances. I think that at the end of the day, if you're a Duke fan or if you're not a Duke fan, you talk about their big three in Shire, Singler, and Nolan Smith. Throughout the tournament, only one game of all three of those guys showed up on the same game. And I think you can look at that one of two ways. Is it a glass half full or a glass half empty? I say it's a glass half full because they're continuing to win in spite of that. I think they're either due for all three guys to have a great game together, or they're due for, once again, they can win without all those three guys. So I think Duke and Michigan State are going to be the two teams that come out on top in both of those games.
I know Blake's not going to like it, but I think Duke is due right now because, honestly, Smith's been playing a lot better as of late. Shire's finally got his offensive game. That was the guy.
He was in a bad slump.
Yeah, that was the guy that season. I said, okay, he's had a bad slump the whole second half of the season into the NCAA tournament. If this guy can ever turn it around, this team will be good. And Singler had his first bad game in forever.
Well, you know what?
I think he'll come back.
On the opposite side of that, too, I think Singler's regressing a little bit from where he was earlier in the year.
But look at who he's had. I think he's had a lot of tough defensive matchups. Yeah. I mean,
no, he has. I'm not trying to say it's a bad.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying, I think, once again, I view this as an optimistic thing where I say, look, Singler isn't the guy that everybody thought he would be at the beginning of the year. He's still a very, very good player, but he's not as dominant as people thought he would be, and they're still winning.
He hasn't needed to be because nobody really expected Nolan to be as good as he's been.
No, you're exactly right.
If those three combined, that's the beauty of it. When you have a three-headed monster, you can have one go out, and it's kind of like what the Celtics have done in years past. I mean, that three-headed monster's gotten older now, but in years past, I mean, that's why they were able to win a championship. They'd have Ray Allen that sucked through the playoffs on their championship run, but KG and Paul Pierce were pulling them up. Then Ray Allen came on, and they were just unstoppable. Nobody was going to touch them. That's just the same thing with Duke, I think, right now, because Shire's come on. Smith's been playing great, and I think Singler, he had one bad game.
That was his first bad game forever.
Yeah, and I think he's going to come back. You know, he's going to bounce back from that, and they've been playing great defense. If you can get 45 points from that trio right there, I think you're set. 45 or more. Yeah. And really, each game, like you said, Blake, it's kind of guaranteed that they're going to get 45 to 50 points.
It's been coming from two guys. So if you get the three guys going.
If you get three guys, I mean, that's enough scoring for just a whole entire team, let alone what Mason, Miles Plumlee, Lance Thomas, all those guys can do.
The one interesting thing, and I think West Virginia has a real, real shot. Once again, all these teams have a real shot of winning this whole thing. I think the winner of the West Virginia-Duke game wins it all, period. I think those are the two best teams in the tournament.
Yeah, that's
from
my
top
feeling.
To bottom. I think they have the best overall players. They got the best.
Another consensus about the NCAA tournament.
We know what that means. Go opposite. Go left.
Butler. Yeah. If you're picking them, man, and you got money on them, go
dial 1-800. Go opposite. The thing about the West Virginia team that I think they have a real shot at is using their length, their athleticism.
Yeah,
Baylor had that, and for the first half of the game against Duke the other night, Baylor was using it. They were getting offensive rebounds. They were getting second chance opportunities, and then they kind of got away from it. They were getting the ball in
foul trouble.
They got in foul trouble. They were using their athleticism, though, to run the court. And Duke had a hard time transition-wise dealing with that. But then they got satisfied with playing this half-court style of offense and defense, and Duke's going to gonna beat you. That's what Duke does. So I think if West Virginia does what they did against Kentucky, and I think they're going to try to.
Absolutely.
They're going to get the ball in transition, penetrate, and maybe get some easy
buckets. There were times where Missoula was just weaving through that Kentucky defense like it was nothing and getting easy layups. So if they can come out and do that against
Duke, it's kind of deja vu.
But I will say this. I was the biggest skeptic towards Duke coming into the NCAA tournament, even coming into the ACC tournament, because I said, you know what, they're the legitimate number one team in the ACC. Yeah, they've been playing like a top five team, maybe even the best team in the nation at one point or another, and maybe they might be if they win. They will be if they win the championship. But my thing was, okay, they rely very heavily on the three, and they don't always play great defense. I was like, that's the two things that I want to see. This tournament, they haven't relied quite as heavily on the three. They've been they haven't come out quite as hot as they did in some games. I mean, they had games in which they started, seemed like 8 of 8 from 3-point range.
That was crazy.
And then they would have to rally to be able to get that lead back because teams would come back on them. They wouldn't play good defense.
That's just the law of average. Dude, you can't hit every three you throw.
Oh, yeah. And you're going to go through droughts when you rely on 3-pointers. But I think they've really found an inside presence. Zubek, he didn't have his best game against Baylor, but he's been a solid contributor.
He does just enough to take enough pressure off those guys to where they can make their shots.
Mason Plumlee. He had an all right game. Miles had a bad game against Baylor, but I think they're going to come around. And then you look, Lance Thomas is a great defender. Andre Dawkins is really coming to his own. He's been a great 3-point shooter as well. They've started to kind of add depth out of nowhere that they didn't really have
expecting.
It at the beginning of the season. Nobody would have said Zubek would have been on. Nobody even knew who the Plumlee brothers it were in the first half of the season. Really, not that many people expected Nolan Smith to be on. They expected to be Singler and Shire. They're saying they've got a great tandem. Now they have a trio and a little bit of a bench.
To go back back to the thought about them, you know, not having the athleticism to match up with West Virginia. The times where they kind of stood their ground against Baylor was when the Plumlee brothers came in and took Zubek off the court, spelled some relief for him, and they provided enough athleticism. Obviously, they're not as athletic as Baylor, but they provided enough of an.
They're a lot closer than Zubek is.
And they provided enough
of
size.
Yeah, and they provided enough of a spark. So I think those two guys could be very key in what they do against West Virginia, not for playing heavy minutes, but for going in there
just
and just
energetic spurts.
Yeah, just providing some relief. I think it's going to be interesting. I think all matchups are going to be less than 10 points.
I really
I'd be
like,
surprised if they were more than 10 points.
I really like the way West Virginia matches up in this game, though, with their outside game. Well, nobody's thinking they're going to hit like they did against
Kentucky. That's the thing about West Virginia. They don't typically shoot that well from three, so can they do it for two games in a row?
That kind of scares you. But the way they get after on defense, you got Bob Huggins, who's been there before.
Huggy Bear.
That was the thing with Baylor. They're coached by a guy that's, you know.
And that's the thing that worries me a little bit about Butler. They've never been there before. Yeah. Sometimes those teams, and you know, you hate to say it, it's kind of cliche that, hey, if you've never been there before, you get a little starstruck. You're like, okay, I'm on the biggest stage.
Especially, I mean, being in Indianapolis is going to help them, but it's also probably going to hurt them.
I think it's going to go both. I think it cuts both ways, though, because when you think about it, too, I always like to think, you know, sometimes, we talked about it with the U.S. Olympic team in the hockey, when they were in the hockey competition. We talked with Greg Wyshynski, who came on, and I asked him the question, look, this team's young, they're unproven, but on the flip side of that, do they not know any better?
Could be too dumb to realize you're not supposed to
win. And he said, you know what? I do agree. I think that that is very possible.
Kind of what happened with the ASU women's basketball team.
And I think
extremely young, able to win the WBI championship.
And you know the other thing, too, about that is Butler thinks they deserve to be here. And I think it's one thing when a team does. Yeah, and they do deserve to be here. But they
got a swagger.
They're not shocking themselves. You know, I think there's sometimes there are teams, a team like George Mason, definitely shocked themselves getting that far to the Final Four.
Yeah.
And so when you're a team who believes you're that good and you're it's not that they're young. They're young by years,
but
inexperience. I think that they're going to be all right. It's going to be a great Final Four.
My thinking is the four best teams really are in the Final Four this year. Butler, they're getting that Cinderella label, but they're not a Cinderella team. They're probably the hottest team in the nation now.
24
in a row. There's a reason why they're here. But the thing is that when you get here now, when you get to the Final Four, some teams, for whatever reason, I've heard plenty of people say this. Chris Paul, when he was at Wake Forest, his last year here, he was like, I can't wait to really my goal is to get to the Final Four. I said, the Final Four? Don't you want to win a championship?
Yeah.
And a lot of teams really kind of hang their hats on being able to get to the Final Four because that ultimately kind of does set the stage for one of the biggest series of events because the Final Four, you know you're the four best teams in the nation, and now you're competing to go to the national championship. A lot of teams kind of set their sights at that. Yeah. I'm not saying that Butler will, but I'm saying that when you get down to this point, these are the four best teams in the nation. Michigan State has that experience. They went to the championship game last year.
And
Duke has had experience before. Not this senior group, unfortunately, but Coach K's been there. West Virginia, Bob Huggins has been there. This team hasn't. But either way, Butler's kind of like the odd man out right now because they're the ones that don't have anybody, coach or players, that have really been to the Final Four. So I think that's where it stands out.
You can't expect them to handle a situation
where eventually
they've never been there.
Something when you have four teams that are pretty equal in obviously in quality and players, coaching and all, something has to stand out. One way that they win, and that's either coaching or experience, I think.
It's not really as much to do about talent.
Talent got you here. Now it's about how can you outsmart everybody because now there's plays.
Everybody's talented.
Yeah, now those plays where, all right, you made a lucky three at the buzzer to win it. Okay, you got here with that, but what about when you're down by two? Coach has got to design a play now or you got to be able to execute on defense.
Brad Stevens did show his ability to do that, though, in the
exactly. Yeah. No, that's what I was about to say. In rebuttal to that, I think they haven't been the team that's barely eking by. They've been beating teams, not handily, but soundly. They've been in control
of
games.
They've had double-digit leads both the last two games.
And when a team like Syracuse, one of the best teams in the country all year long, top five team in the country all year long, they come in and come storming back. It was one of those situations. Say, all right,
that's
Butler.
A lot of poise.
Yeah, that was a cute story, but it looks like your game's over now. And then here they come back and they beat Syracuse. Same thing. They're going against Kansas State. Kansas State tries to make a run on them and come back, but they handle themselves and they take care of business.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. The four best teams are in it. I just think with the coaching matchups, I think Coach K and Coach Izzo are going to be the ones.
I agree with you. I think these games are going to be close. And you know what? I think these are the sort of things that, especially at the college level, these guys use for ammunition to prepare themselves further. And so to keep hearing people say, look, you guys are young, you're inexperienced, you can't do this, you've never been here before, I wouldn't count it out entirely. It's entirely possible. Watch out for that. The other interesting thing I wanted to talk about in terms of the tournament, Saturday the games get underway 6:05, I think, and then 9:05 or 9:35, I can't remember what time. West Virginia Duke's the early game. Jim Nance is going to be on the call because that's what he does.
As he has been Forever.
As long as time.
Masters, he does Super kind Bowl, of, does NCAA tournament, he does everything.
Kind of like Aladdin.
He is Mr.
Tale as old as time.
It's a rough life.
He's the voice of CBS Sports. He does the Masters, as you said, he does everything. He's the guy when you think CBS Sports. But you know what? There's another guy who's been gaining, I don't want to say grassroots momentum. It's been much bigger than that. But he's become a cult figure, especially in our generation of people. Gus Johnson. And Gus Johnson, look, for a while, I didn't like Gus Johnson. And I didn't like Gus because I guess I didn't understand.
I still don't like him that much.
Well, I didn't understand Gus. And part of me thought, well, Gus just doesn't get it. But Gus gets it.
Absolutely.
Gus knows what he does well, and he's going to keep
and
doing
it. And he
plays
it.
Yeah, he does play it. And you know what? Once you embrace it, it's one of those things where it's like, man, I really love this. Watching Xavier versus Kansas State and listening to Gus play
the
after
highlight,
play after play.
The highlight
play.
Was Gus Johnson. The highlight was not the play. The highlight,
yeah,
there,
before
there's highlights
highlight,
set up completely of just of Gus Johnson.
Yeah, before
that.
Highlight Reel made it onto YouTube of the game, there was actually a highlight reel of what Gus Johnson did during that game. That's how big this guy has gotten. So I asked the question to both of you. If you had to pick, if you were in charge, if you were in charge of CBS Sports and you could say, all right, here's my broadcast crew. And you can mix it up a little bit. Do you want Gus or do you want Jim? If I had to pick a crew, I'm going not Gus and Len Elmore, because Len Elmore doesn't do it for
He's
me.
Garbage.
But I want Gus and Clark Kellogg. That would be one exciting basketball game.
Well, you know what? I thought about this, and at first I said, yeah, Gus is a little bit on the theatrics. He revels in the theatrics for sure. And is it overplayed? Absolutely.
We love every minute of it.
Yeah,
but it's still great. That's the thing. It's like once you embrace it, it's like, man, I still like it.
Well, you know, somebody wrote about, all right, if it's a 96 field team that you know, get Gus Johnson to do the majority of the games, it'd be so much more interesting. I can see the positive of that because he would make boring games very interesting. Because I've heard him, when a three-point shot was made with 3 seconds into the first half, about go into cardiac arrest from having a heart attack over a three-point shot. But at the same time, I can also see the negative of listening to, I don't know, 30 games of him call games. It'd be a little over the top. That's why I think.
Well, you know what? I think that's the truth. You know, I don't like Gus when it's a bad game and he's trying to make it exciting. But when it's an already exciting game, he takes it to the next level.
And that's what got me thinking is that I think we all kind of like Gus Johnson in amounts. And I think he's perfect for the NCAA tournament because you never know what's going to happen. There's so many surprises.
He was good for MMA, too, when CBS had some MMA on there.
And you know what? I think that if I had to choose, it would all come down to the game, though. I think it would all come down to the game, because if it was last year with North Carolina and Michigan State, I'd just say just go with Jim Nantz, because Gus Johnson really couldn't make that game any more interesting to me. But if it's a close game, I kind of want to hear Gus Johnson. I know you can't make that call based on, all right, here's the two teams
that
won.
Conditional of you.
All right, we'll go with Gus on this one. But honestly, that's the only way I could really determine it, because Gus Johnson, like you said, he takes a great game and makes it even better because of his calls.
They're
crazy. I mean, with his theatrics, it can get over the top for boring games, but it adds to it when it's
absolutely
a close game, because you know that something's going to come, because you're waiting out, you're hinging on every single shot that they're shooting, because you're not sure what he's going to say next or how he's going to react.
I didn't have any stake in that Xavier K-State game, but I was jumping off my couch rooting for that game every time a shot went down.
Well, what if you got Jim Nantz calling it and you watch it with Gus Johnson?
We'll
compromise.
Yeah, being near Gus would do it for me. You know what the thing is? I think it's a generational thing, because I agree with you. When it's a blowout, Jim makes it interesting from the perspective of, okay, you still feel like you're watching something prestigious, you're watching something
absolutely
monumental. But when you're watching it with Gus, it's like, man, this is it. And this is our generation. This is our culture now. I want something in my face. I want something hard hitting. I want it
and
fast.
I think that's
I
why
energetic
he appeals to us. And no offense to Jim Nantz, I think he's an awesome guy. He really is a great person, and he's a great broadcaster. But I almost think that over the course of the years, listening to call championship games, Super Bowls, the Masters, everything, he's more fitted for golf, more kind of laid back.
Listening
sports
to him talk about the Masters, you might go to sleep, but if you stay awake, it's awesome.
What same thing? I like Vern Lundquist on basketball. I think he does a good job, but Vern Lundquist on golf on during the Masters, it's like, man, get me a pillow. I'm going to sit down on the couch. I'm going to pass out and listen to his soothing voice as
kinda,
I watch Tiger putt
like
from the 18th
green. It's kind of like Bob Costas is for me. Bob Costas, when he called NBA games, brilliant. I loved it. But now that he's kind of on the NFL show and on NBC just doing more hosts, he really bores me now.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got to feel the vibe. He's kind of like a reliever. He's kind of like Jabba Chamberlain.
He's
got a little Jabba.
So final vote. On emotion. We got two Gus's, and are you a Nance? I mean, beyond the conditional thing, if you had to pick.
I was picking Nance.
Oh, you're picking Nance. Okay.
I'm picking Nance. Especially if you're a CBS exec, you can't go against Jim Nantz.
So yeah, what do you? Yeah,
I,
yes
I
or no?
See, you know what? I think honestly, I've heard Jim Nantz enough. I think I'd give Gus Johnson.
Okay, so
we
get a 2-1. I thought you were going to be a Gus. I thought he was going to be a Jim guy.
Yeah. You never know with us.
Unbelievable. Like
a bunch of wild cards in here.
Very awful.
The other interesting thing, and Blake last night, your Tar Heels, they played a very good game.
Going to the championship.
They're going to. They could be national champions. National
back to back to back final.
Should hang a banner up.
Yeah,
looking for back to back championships.
You know what? I want to talk about that for a second because you talk about it, you kind of poke fun, but there is some seriousness to that. Do you hang a banner up? And so my question is for a school like North Carolina.
Absolutely not.
Do you think they will, first of all?
I think they will. I hope they don't.
You know, that's the difference. People talk about.
I hope they do it against Duke, too. And if Duke wins the national championship, I hope they have their own ceremony.
How does that taste?
Yeah. I mean, technically, Carolina is a national.
Yeah.
You know what? Technically, the NIT was the original tournament.
It was the good one back in the day.
It was the original one. Yeah. So technically, you are national champions. You're just national invitational. Yep.
And I mean, the NIT this year has been really tough. I mean, there's been a lot of great teams.
It's a college tournament.
Look, Carolina beat a good URI team last night.
It's not Northeastern. Louisiana State Tech.
Let's match up who Duke played this year and who Carolina played in their tournaments.
You know, I heard a joke yesterday.
Carolina played almost as much talent as Duke.
I heard somebody say yesterday that Carolina's had a tougher road to the NIT than Duke had to the Final Four. I don't believe that necessarily.
Nah,
they've had
absolutely.
A tough road to the. You got to be kidding. I mean, those are teams that are in the end. I mean, look, Arkansas Pine Bluff.
Sticking my guns.
Obviously, Carolina's played tougher teams than Arkansas Pine Bluff. Yeah. They haven't played a tougher team than Baylor. It was a legitimately good team.
Yeah, I think you throw away that playing game because that's just there anyways. But when you get down to the brass tacks of it, I mean, Duke's played a better schedule. But I mean, like I said, the NIT's been probably the toughest this year of recent memory that I can think of.
They had eight teams in the tournament that were ranked at one point and pretty highly.
Well, the thing is,
Connecticut up there and Carolina, who are both top ten teams at one point.
Two things. Carolina got lucky last night, and they got lucky at the end of the game because that was by the letter of the law, if you're a referee, you got to call that tripping at the end. I know it's inadvertent, but the NCAA changed the rules this year to inadvertent trips. Even if they weren't intentional, even if they were off the ball before somebody had possession.
I think he tripped more on his own guy.
I think the NFL needs to adopt that as well because you see all these, inadvertent trips.
Well, the guy didn't have possession of the ball when he tripped him, but he was going for that loose ball, and so that should have been a trip. Look, it's one of those calls. We talked about it earlier. If you're a Carolina fan and he called that foul, you hate it.
You're furious.
If you're a URI guy, you're furious. And you saw their coaching staff was very upset. It's one of those things that goes either way, but by the letter of the law.
Which fan base are you going to upset? Carolina, you're right. If you're
I mean, I mean, by the letter
Michael
of the law,
Jordan
though,
or who came from
Lamar Odom.
By the letter of the law, that was an upset. But here's my quick question to you guys:
Kim Kardashian.
We're up against the break. So, is NIT success for Carolina making it all the way to the NIT finals now? Against they're going to play.
Dayton.
I almost said Ole Miss, but they lost.
It was almost an all A-10 final.
Yeah, but if you're Carolina, winning an NIT or making it to the finals in the NIT, is that more special than maybe being one and done in the NCAA tournament? What's better?
I think it depends on how you enter the tournament. If you're a 3 seed and you lose, then it's garbage.
I think that's very conditional.
Yeah, it's really depends upon the situation.
And you know what? I was thinking from ASU's realm. You know, if ASU were to have a chance to enter the NCAA tournament or win the NIT, win the CIT, for goodness sakes. You know, I was thinking about that at first, and I was like, it actually was a raging debate in my head because I thought, well, you know what? You kind of want that NCAA tournament berth because that gets the fan base on. Oh, yeah, we're able to watch them on national stage. Yeah. And people say, who is this Appalachian State?
But if you lose by 30 in the first round to a mediocre team, that's when it gets bad.
It doesn't matter. And plus, you want to bring a championship back and say, listen, we were able to play in postseason play.
It's like a bowl game at the end of college football season. If you win a garbage bowl, you still end it on a winning note. That's something to go out and play against recruits with. And then that's why, especially for a team like ASU, I think it'd be better to win the NIT than go and lose, get blown out in the second round.
I think for this year for Carolina, obviously it's not a proud thing if they do win the NIT championship.
Please don't hang a bet.
But honestly, I almost think it would be better than going one and done the NCAA tournament because they probably would have got a low seed and it would have just been like everybody would just be like figures. Okay, that's the way the season.
And then we got some momentum now to stuff to build on next year. Larry Drew now said that he's coming back after some.
And that's the thing that happened to ASU. They got a lot of games in. They set a record for 37 games this season, most by four. And on top of that, you look at the experience, the practice that they're able to get in.
Yeah.
It really helps, and it prolongs the season for the seniors, which I'm sure they love.
Get 20 wins
in the season. You got to have that toss-up.
Deion Thompson set the record in Carolina history for most games played. So that's something that happened.
Most games played, not most games actually showing up and doing something. But
you're getting technical.
That's a different story. Hey, by the way, Blake, you're talking about raising that banner. You know, Kentucky, the only banners they put up there are Final Four national championships.
UCLA only hangs national championship.
See, and I love the Final Four thought. I mean, that's making it far, but at the same time, you're going to hang a Final Four banner. It's kind of like second place.
They don't hang anything else, conference, anything. So definitely interesting there.
Prestige.
Hey, when we get back, baseball's getting underway Sunday night. Yankees, Red Sox, Monday, the rest of the league. So we'll be doing.
Nobody cares.
Yeah.
Sunday. Red Sox, Yankees.
That's right. We'll be talking a little
watch.
Major League Baseball right here when we get back on Sports Out the Wazoo on 90.5 WASU, WASURocks.com.
Don't touch that dial. Sports Out the Wazoo's coming right back.
This is Greg.
I already know what I want.
Wherever Greg goes, he already knows what he wants to order.
I already know what I want.
Greg has never been to McAdoo's, but he thinks he knows what to get.
I already know what I want.
That's enough, Greg. Now, Greg has never seen McAdoo's menu of 141 items, not including their drink menu.
I already know what I want.
Hey, man, what can I get for you?
This might take a while.
Located on King Street in downtown Boone, McAdoo's, just to be there.
Blue Ridge Vision presents Things You Don't Want to See. The iPhone with a taser application.
What's this app do?
Ow! Your girlfriend with Tiger Woods.
Oh, it's cool. I got my voicemail changed. They can't catch me this time.
The temperature lower than your age.
This is the worst 17th birthday ever.
Your mom dressed as Lady Gaga.
Want to see my poker face?
For things you don't want to see, there's always bad vision. For things you do want to see, there's Blue Ridge Vision located in the Boone Mall.
Your station, 90.5 WASU, is working with your newspaper, the Appalachian, to bring you the most relevant student news in the High Country. The freshest issue of the Appalachian is available every Tuesday and Thursday across campus. WASU presents Appalachian 1800 with new special segments from the Appalachian. The Appalachian and 90.5 WASU, by students, for students.
Ah, springtime in the High Country. A time where the sun shines longer, the flowers begin to bloom, and finally, the snow stops. Well, we're never certain about that. One thing that we do know for certain is that Imprints on King Street has officially licensed ASU clothing along with custom screen printing and embroidery for clubs or organizations. Imprints, King Street, downtown Boone. 265-4929. Online at imprintsinc.com.
You're listening to Sports Out the Wazoo. The phone lines are open, 828-264-4905.
Welcome back to Sports Out the Wazoo, sponsored by Capone's. 265-1886 is the number for Capone's, located across from the Turchin Center. We're back talking in a little MLB preview, getting ready for the season. The big matchup obviously starts on Easter, and what do you know? Red Sox Yankees going to be a big matchup.
Yeah,
obviously
just more for theatrics rather than opening
day. Kicks off the season. But you know what?
It's going to be.
It's going to be pretty golden because the Yankees come back World Series champs. There's a lot of talk. Red Sox Nation was starting to shift, saying, "Oh no, now it's going to be 89 years before the Yankees win a World Series." Be honest, the Yankees have that much payroll, that much talent, that many players. Yeah. It's not going to be 89 years. That's for sure. Yeah, I mean they're going to buy themselves a championship.
But you know what? Did Girardi change numbers this year?
He did. He changed it to 28.
Yeah.
Okay. Unbelievable. You know what? We'll start in the AL East because I think
you put a dot 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 afterwards.
The AL East. Honestly, it's not. It's the AL East. It is what it's been for all these years. For the past 5 years now, or well, the past 3 years now. When you think about Tampa being a three team race now, being Tampa, New York, and then Boston.
It's become a lot more power, much more power division than in years past. Because I mean, obviously there was in times past. I think before probably 2004 times. It was usually 6-7 games that were separating the two teams. They're both great teams. They're both teams that would get into the playoffs or something like that. But honestly, when you came down to it, it was never tied divisions or three teams all within three to five games. I mean, the Yankees paced themselves last year and got way ahead of the Red Sox. But still, the Red Sox were a powerful team going into the playoffs. Yeah. The Yankees were just an absolute dynasty almost last year. Just the way they were were built. Yeah, there's a very special team. So, but you look at the Rays, they're still very young, and you know what? They're going to have a lot of great starting pitching, a lot of good hitting.
Well, you hope. I mean, this it's kind of back to what they were in 08, where it's you got a lot of unproven arms. And
yeah,
you,
they've got some talent down there.
Tons of talent, raw talent.
They've got the best farm system in the major
leagues. Oh, yeah. So. I mean, I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, it's them, Minnesota, Oakland.
You get a top five pick.
Yeah, the only thing that's kind of going against them is obviously they got rid of Scott Kazmir, so he's gone. Not that he was that great, but he was kind of the ace of that staff, and he was the veteran that kept staying there to kind of tutor some of the other guys. David
the
Price.
24-year-old veteran.
Yeah, 24-year-old veteran. Whatever, I mean, he came up when he was like 18 or 19, for goodness sakes. But David Price really hasn't lived up to the hype that everybody thought he would.
No, I mean, wait, he's going to be like the fourth or fifth arm in the out of the rotation this year.
Yeah, and really, you look at him, this is a left-hander that can throw 100 miles per hour. These people are saying, this kid's going to be a stud. But you know what? When you can't put it all together,
sometimes
pitching is a
work.
Tricky, tricky thing. It's not all about speed. It's not about velocity. And sometimes it's not even about where you place the ball. You got to have a little bit of everything, and you got to have the right mentality. I mean, Jabba Chamberlain should tell you enough about that. You know what? Pitchers are a cranky bunch, and I'm not talking about mood-wise. I'm talking about, hey, you know what? Their arms act up. They don't have the right mentality.
Sometimes you just go out there and you just don't have it. You're like, where's my curveball at?
Yeah.
It's not working.
There's going to be 30-plus games a year. I mean, it's going to happen.
And when you get to the major leagues, everything's amplified, especially when you get on a big stage. Now all of a sudden, whoever thought Tampa Bay was going to be a big stage, but now that they're playing, you know, really in the AL East, they're really playing. They're not a cellar dweller, and they're playing in Boston and New York, and you have those teams as well with new young talent. When those guys suddenly have one or two bad games and they're getting booed or they don't know what's going on, then they start trying to make adjustments or they start overworking themselves to try to make adjustments to get better. And you see that it doesn't pan out. You got to have the right mentality of saying, hey, listen, I'm going to have bad games, but I'm going to be able to come back from that.
Yeah.
And that's why starting pitchers, they're so rare. Everybody's always trying to trade for a good starting pitcher. Nobody wants to give up their starting pitcher. And honestly, it takes a long time. It's very strenuous, and for teams that are trying to win now, it's kind of tough because they have to say, all right, we got to throw you in the fire pan, but at the same time, you got to be able to do well. We're going to have to pull you out and then put you
back in. We'll get you out of here if you're not
Well, you know what? That's to me, when I look at the AL East, who's going to come out on top, it does go down to pitching, but there is a difference maker there. But I think it's going to be Boston, and I think it's going to be the Yankees. And I think
Tampa Bay has the best storyline, I feel like, in the AL East this year with the story of Carl Crawford, who's been the face of their franchise forever. He's the best left fielder in baseball, I feel like. He's unbelievably fast, always leads the league in stolen bases, and he's coming up on a contract year where he's going to get a lot of money from somebody. The Red Sox
probably
and
Yankees,
are going to be lined up, and they're going to have a bidding war over him, and they might end up trading him. They showed last year they're not afraid to trade a big piece, even if they're close.
And
they traded Kazmir while they were 4.5 games out of the wild card.
And that's what somebody said is, hey, you know what? They already have a guy that's winning the minor leagues to kind of replace him. On top of that, that's very comparable to him, and by midseason
they could have
might be ready. And then on top of that, you get rid of him, you get rid of that salary, get some flexibility. You don't have to worry about him walking for nothing.
Back.
Yeah, and at the same time, you get a lot of talent back that can help you. And you say because every team—that's
how it works. Look at the Twins' blueprint. Look at how the Rays have done over.
You know
the
past what? Every team has a weakness by midseason. Yankees last year had bench problems. Red Sox kind of had some bullpen and a little starting pitching rotation.
They had offensive problems by the end of the year. And the thing is that's where I see the end of the year.
But I'm talking midseason.
Well,
David Ortiz had started to come around.
This is where I see
everybody else had.
Once again, this is where I see where this division is heading. The Yankees are by far the best team. And not head and shoulders, but if you had to pick one team from top to bottom, they don't have any really glaring weakness. Their lineup from
the, not right now.
The only thing looking at the Yankees and you know what, staring at a very nonpartisan view, is the thing that kind of scares me is that they are so healthy. No team is this healthy. I mean, no team is really this
healthy. Well, you know what, Brandon?
There's
that's
not a
what I
single
talk
injury
about.
At all. So this could either work out to where they could just really tear things up if things go right.
Or somebody's
stay healthy,
knee could get tore up.
Or then the injuries are going to start to snowball. Because when you see teams this healthy, something eventually happens.
That's what I want to talk about for a second. Because I think it's funny because, especially, I know you're kind of, you got to be a little bit leery. Because as you said, it's going too well right now. But if that's your biggest concern, as a Yankees fan, you're doing pretty well. And I think once again, I think the Yankees, their starting five, arguably one of the best in baseball. I think the Red Sox have the best starting five from top to bottom in baseball. But the thing that kills me about the Red Sox is they don't have that offensive firepower that they've had in years past. Ortiz has gone over the hill. Can he slug? Yes, occasionally, but not consistently anymore. You let a guy like Jason Bay walk away. You don't bring him back. Matt Holliday was out
Mike
on the open market.
Cranky with
injuries. Yeah, and Mike Lowell, there's rumors of him going to Texas now. A trade may be happening with him.
Well, it almost did. Actually, yeah. It went through, and then they had. Yeah. Rescinded because obviously the wrist bothered him, and then now knee injuries.
I think the Yankees win the division. I think maybe it's by 5-7 games, somewhere in that region. It'll be decently close for most of the season. I think it might even come down the last couple weeks of the year. I think the toss ups between Boston and Tampa, because I think Tampa is going to be able to manufacture runs maybe a little bit more efficiently than Boston, but I think Boston might have better pitching and might have a better bullpen, and they'll be able to deny other teams runs. So at the end of the day, I'd have to say Yankees and Red Sox, because I'd hate to pick against the two of them.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't surprise me if maybe even the Rays once again competed for the division title and maybe even won the wild card.
Or something that's absolutely crazy, the wild card not coming from the East.
It could happen.
Yeah, I don't see Seattle's improved this year.
Seattle's got the best defensive club in baseball and stout starting pitching with Clipley and Felix Hernandez.
That's an interesting division to me because I think if Seattle gets in the playoffs, they win the division outright. And I think that there's a real, real possibility. What the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim,
yeah,
what they've
LA
done. yeah, exactly. The Anaheim Angels, what the they
Angels.
Really should be.
Of the world of California.
What they've done this year in letting guys walk away like Sean Figgins and Vladimir Guerrero and John Lackey. Look, they aren't what they used to be, and I think people need to realize, look, you can't it's like the Red Sox, you know, you can't just let people go year after year and say, I'm putting my foot in the ground, I'm not willing to spend money on you. Eventually you got
to
spend money.
They almost lost it last year to Texas. Texas had a very good year last year, so the West is
actually going to be competitive for a first time in a long time.
Yeah, well, the thing is, if you're a team like Los Angeles to me, or the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
Just the Angels.
I'm just going to call them Los Angeles. We're talking about the AL, so it works. The thing is, if you're the Angels, if you're going to let a guy walk, you better get something in return for him. And that's why these younger teams, look, they don't just let guys walk in free agency.
They trade them,
and you build talent in return. So for the Angels, if you're an Angels fan, look, you just let three of your best players from last season walk away and got nothing in return. Mm-hmm. How is that supposed to make you a better team in the long run? I just don't see it. And Seattle, they've made some good additions. Look, Milton Bradley, I know he's a head case, but I like that fit for him.
I like it there, but I don't like the fact that he's going to have to hit fourth. He's never gotten more than 72 RBIs.
He's not going to be a great fix, but he's going to add to that offense a little bit.
He's going
to
offense was anemic last year. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what? When you're looking at this team, obviously, in Seattle, L.A., Mike Socia, don't underestimate what he can do as a manager.
No.
Because you want to talk about a guy that gets the most out of his players, it's Mike Socia.
Agreed.
Year in and year out, I continuously say, I don't know that the Angels are going to be able to do it, and they continuously prove me wrong. But the thing that hurt them last year, the thing that I said looked like it was their glaring weakness, was starting pitching. And what did they do to address it? They lose their ace instead. And now they come back with two or three guys that have been injured that may or may not. One of them, Kelvin Escobar, I think, is the one that's considering retirement.
Right.
And you look at their rotation,
I mean,
it's very
young. His arm's about falling off a couple
times. And really, they're very banged up. Irvin Santana's still unproven.
And
you don't know what you're going to get.
Casimir came over in the
trade.
You don't know what you're going to get out of him.
You never know what you're going to get out of him. You saw him get really roughed up in the playoffs as well, especially against the Yankees. He doesn't have that mentality, too. He's a little bit of a head case. Yeah, and so when you look at it, honestly, Seattle or Texas could overtake
them. Well, you know what?
Texas just doesn't have the rotation. That's the thing that worries me the most.
I mean, they got great offense.
Yeah,
but the thing is,
Seattle, I think Seattle's going to have good enough offense. You got to have great starting pitching, and that's what they have. Clifley and Felix Hernandez, probably the best 1-2 tandem in all of Major League.
And the best defense. It's not even questionable. The
best defense
in baseball.
Not even close.
The thing about this division, it's so funny. Mike Socia said, if you're saying this division's tough all of a sudden, you're mistaken. It's tough every year. Yeah. And statistically, it is. Their winning percentage from top to bottom, including all four teams in the division, was the highest in all of Major League Baseball last year, over 500. People, once again, you think of the AL East, but teams like Toronto.
They beat up on each other.
Yeah, they kind of beat up on each other.
Baltimore,
they drag it down.
You can't do anything if you're Baltimore
when you're
playing
so
the
young.
Yankees, Red Sox, and Tampa every week.
So I think the AL West is very interesting. Another division that I find interesting is the AL Central. And I find it interesting because, once again, it's the two-team race. It's Chicago and Minnesota.
Yeah.
Minnesota, you're losing Joe Nathan.
They honestly could come down to Detroit, though, too.
Detroit could be there, yeah.
Minnesota, though, my concern with Minnesota is they haven't added a lot to their team at all.
And
instead, they've lost. They've lost Joe Nathan, the best closer. And that's going to be a huge loss because John Roush, I mean, he's a big-time closer.
They're going to open up
with
closer by committee, so we'll see how that works.
You want to talk about
that never seems to work out too well.
I think the most underrated manager in all of sports, and I say this in sincerity, is Ron Gardenhire for the Twins.
Because, no, I agree with that.
Because he constantly takes AAA, maybe AA talent, and makes it into Major League Baseball.
And they're always
in
a race.
Sure, they're not flashy. Sure, they don't win a lot of games, but they win their division time in and time out.
They play very good, solid, fundamental baseball.
And you know what? And I think that's kind of the key to winning that division. I think Detroit right now, they have a lot of glaring issues, at starting pitching. So, honestly, if I had to go with
Verlander and then who else?
Then who else? It's a big drop-off. Nate Robinson, do you go with him? I mean, he might get traded.
What happened to that guy?
He had a great spring training. Yeah. I think he was like a .83 ERA.
It's all upstairs with that kid.
Yeah, but that's the thing that scares me. When you're in the AL, that's a completely different scenario.
Place, yeah.
And plus, he only had one great season, his rookie year. And ever since then, he's been
He was just as much a sensation with the bat, and he doesn't get to use that.
Well, you know what? The interesting thing, if you look at the Twins last year had 28 or more home runs from four different players. When you talk about Justin Morneau, Michael Kadire, Jason Kubel, and then they also had Joe Mauer. And that's the first time since 1987 that they had four different players on their team to manufacture 28 or more home runs in a single season.
That's not an everyday accomplishment.
No, it's definitely not. And I think that offensively they're going to be fine. One GM, Dayton Moore from the Royals, said, look, this is a very good team, but the problem with them is they haven't had to worry about the ninth inning in years. Now with Joe Nathan out to start the year, and probably for, what he's going to be out. I mean,
the year.
He's done for the year.
He's been bar none over the last Mariano Rivera,
over
anybody you can name, the best closer over the last 5 to 8 years.
Yeah.
In all of Major League Baseball. But the thing is now you have to replace that, and not only that, you have to replace an amazing talent. And this is a team in the Twins that did not win a lot last year. They had 87 wins all of last year. They didn't do anything to improve, and really losing Joe Nathan's only going to push them back.
Obviously.
The White Sox probably have arguably the least talked about rotation. That's probably one of the best that everybody needs to be talking about.
One through four, Burley through perfect game.
Yeah, one through four, they might be the best. They're up in the top three, I would say, in my opinion. One through five, in all sincerity, it depends on what Phil Hughes can do in New York for me. I think they had the best rotation one through five. I think they're going to be able to win games. They don't have a great offense, but they're going to be able to do enough.
Well, you know what? That's the interesting thing, because there's that dichotomy there. It's like Minnesota's going to score runs. Can they keep a lead is the problem. I mean, they added J.J. Hardy. They also added O'Dog. So, I mean, they're a very powerful offense, maybe one of the most potent ones in all of baseball this year. But can they hold on to leads?
Well,
that's going to be an issue.
In the ALDS, when you saw Joe Nathan, I mean, you know, like I said, the greatest closer probably the last 5 to 8 years, when he came unraveled, they had nothing.
There's nothing there.
Because when A-Rod got to him in the ALDS and when he blew two saves,
you haven't had to worry about it.
Yeah, that team just went into absolute panic mode. And you could tell a lot of people in Minnesota glad that they had Joe Mauer and were able to sign him up long term. But at the same time, that when they said that, okay, Joe Nathan's gone. I mean, if you go to the Yankees, even with all their resources, they're going to be able to find somebody to fill in. But if you say, okay, Mariano Rivera is gone now, that's going to cost you 5 or 6 games probably during the season right there. What is that going to cost Minnesota? And that's the thing. When it's only a 1 or 2 game race, you're not that great, you haven't made improvements, and you lose your closer
for the entire
year.
But you know what? That's huge. Brought up a good point before in Ron Gardenhire. I think the same of everything you're saying is true for the Twins. I agree. But I think the same is true when you think about the White Sox and Ozzie Guillen as your manager, because that guy is a head case.
And his Twitter account.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That guy tends to, I think, cause more problems sometimes than he helps. And I understand that there's times where, you know, him going on rants, it does help the team. But there are also times where it's like, oh my God, just shut up. Don't talk. Quit. Just go out there and manage games. And I think he tends to maybe put some extra pressure on a team that doesn't necessarily need it all the time. If I'm being honest, I think the Twins are going to do just enough. I think they're going to be scrappy enough, because they always are, to find a way to win this division.
Hey, at least the White Sox have the most unbiased radio announcers in the world, I have to say. You know, Hawk's done a great job. He's so unbiased. I love listening to everything.
You don't even know who he's pulling for.
We'll go to the NL real quick, because we're up against the break. Two divisions that I think are very up for grabs are the NL Central for a change, with obviously the Cardinals are going to be up there. There keeps being talked.
Can the Cubs do something?
Cubs and the Reds are supposed to compete this year. I can't believe it until I see it.
It's Dusty Baker. I don't know. With that team and Dusty Baker, I think Dusty Baker's
so overrated.
The pitching
is there. Can they score runs?
So overrated.
I don't know. And then the NL West, the Dodgers you'd expect to be at the top, but the trendy pick is the Rockies right now. Tim Kirchin said he thinks the Rockies are going to win the World Series.
Well, that's why Tim Kirchner's Tim Kirchner.
Tim Kirchner.
Yes. Well, you know what? I think the NL East is the most wide-open race because, honestly, I agree with that.
Everybody's chalking up to the Phillies, but the NL East is the best division in the National League. It's arguably the most
one through five, I think it's the most competitive division, one through five, because Washington,
they're not scrubs anymore.
I think they could finish 500 this year. They have really made some
best. The Marlins are always underrated. They never get any publicity coming into the season. They always shock
everybody. I know a lot of people that think that the Marlins are going to be back in the playoffs this year.
I think you've got the Braves, Mets, and Phillies all coming back with stout talent.
The Phillies obviously made the World Series two years in a row. They're going to be the favorite. You know what? I have a hard time picking against them, but honestly, my wild card team, if I have to go with a gut team, and I have not said this for years, I think it's going to be the Atlanta Braves. They really have the rotation.
Yeah. You had me
they
scared.
Put together offense.
You had me scared for a second because I thought you were going to go Mets. And honestly, if I'm saying
there's no way. Mets might finish fifth this year.
No, we've been talking about rotations.
They're going to finish fourth, in my
opinion. We've been talking about the rotations all the time. And you've got Jair Jurgens, Tommy Hanson, Derek Lowe, Tim Hudson, and Kenshin Kawakami as a very strong starting five.
Yeah, they're one of the best.
That's a good point because you think about last year, in the middle of last summer, it was who the heck is this Tommy Hanson kid? Where did he come from? And he was this great story. And then it's like, all right, well, the season ended. They didn't do anything. And so off into the sunset they go. But you forget, another year under his belt, this guy's going to be a real stud.
Jason Hayward, too. That kid, the best prospect in all of baseball.
20-year-old right fielder.
This kid is a
6'6", 250. You can just – there's a different – I don't want to throw labels like that on him,
but he's going to be his own
person. Just let him be Jason Hayward. Yeah. He's going to be awesome.
Jason Hayward's going to be a solid guy. He's going to hit for power. He's going to hit for average RBIs. He can steal bags. He's going to play great defense.
And that's why I say Ken Griffey, because that's what Ken Griffey does.
And he really did. I know this is battered around by MLB scouts, and I really hate it, but he is a five-tool player if you're thinking about that. He's got an arm. He can play great defense. Like I said, he steals bases. He hits for average.
He's a minor league player of the year in all of baseball last year.
Yeah, this guy's it. So I think the Braves can really challenge the Phillies. I don't know that they're going to get past them because, honestly, a rotation with Roy Halladay, and I think Cole Hamels is going to have a bounce back year. He's a little bit of a head case as well, but I think they're top to bottom. They're pretty stacked, but we'll see how that is. When you move on to the NL Central, St. Louis has still got a grip on that. I have a hard time seeing anything past him. I think Albert Pujols is going to have another big year. Tony La Russa is probably going to do enough. Yeah, I mean, he's a manager that just does enough. I don't think he's anything great.
He's two losses away from having the second most losses in baseball.
Well, you know what? And that's just playing in a mediocre division of just being able to just eat.
Well, when you have a star player and then you have a very good player in Matt Holliday, but you don't really have anything else on that team.
Well,
it's just starting pitching.
Carpenter and Wainwright have a
good 1-2 combo, and they have the best 3-4 in all of baseball.
And they play solid defense. They're not great defensively, but they play solid defense. Pujols is probably one of the best, maybe the best defensive first baseman in the league.
I think he's the best player in all of major leagues right now. So I think St. Louis, and then going on the NL West, it's going to be hard to go against Los Angeles. But honestly, I think this could be a year that they falter because I don't know how Manny's going to do. That rotation is ugly.
It's going to be a lot of patchwork.
They have a couple young studs that could do something, but if they don't, they're going to falter quickly. So, you know what? I hate going with Colorado. I think that's too trendy of a pick. I'm going to go with the pick that I thought really showed me something last year. I'm going to say San Francisco
can actually win the division this year.
You know what? I think with Tim Lincecum along with Matt Cain and the rest of that team,
offense
is going to be their problem, but I think they'll find enough to get it done.
I think they could get a lot from Buster Posey this year. He's going to be a really influential – he's the number one catching prospect in baseball, and if he comes up and makes an impact, then that'll do a whole lot for
you. You don't have to have great offense really in the NL West. If you can have great pitching and go up against the Dodgers time in, time out, they showed in the playoffs what great pitching will do to the Dodgers.
It's going
to
be interesting. I think this season reminds me a lot of 2000.
Sorry, Dan Valley.
Yeah. I think this season reminds me a lot of 2008. It's very wide open. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't surprise me to see some teams make some runs.
Make some noise, yeah.
Yeah. So maybe Colorado, maybe Tampa Bay is one of those teams. Maybe Cincinnati, who knows? We've been talking about it. Maybe even the Braves, as we just said as well. When we get back, we're going to talk some NFL. We haven't been talking NFL in a while, but Steve Smith of the Carolina Panthers made some comments that you would not believe. I want to know if it makes you mad as a fan.
Make some noise in Panther Nation.
Or if you're okay with it. We'll be talking about that when we get back on Sports Out the Wazoo on 90.5 WASU FM online. It's WASURocks.com.
We like sports and we don't care who knows. From shooting hoops to the Super Bowl. We like sports and we don't care who knows.
Football.
Tennis.
Hockey.
More Sports Out the Wazoo is coming up next.
Now when I say sports, you say nuts. Sports. Nuts. Sports. Nuts.
90.5 WASU presents What's Happening in Boone, brought to you by toddscalendar.com, where the high country goes to know. On Thursday, April 1st, ASU Visiting Writer Series brings you poet Shelby Stevenson. Stevenson presents the Juanita Tobin Memorial Reading in the Plemons Student Union in Table Rock Room at 2 o'clock. Also on Thursday, Crippen's Restaurant in Blowing Rock will host speed dating from 6:30 until 8:30 with appetizers and wine. On Friday, April 2nd, Alliance Bible Fellowship will present Good Friday, a dramatic worship service from 5 to 6 p.m. Also on Friday, the Lucky Strikes Band will play live at Pepper's Bar. The band will be performing classic jazz, blues, and early rock and roll favorites. And that's what's happening in Boone, brought to you by toddscalendar.com. More information on these events and others can be found online at toddscalendar.com.
Hey girl, what's up?
Driving home, LOL, you?
Chillin'. You going to the party at Chris's tonight?
Heck yeah, where? He's so hot.
Yeah, girl, and I think he's into you.
According to the UK's Motor Vehicle Laboratory, texting while driving impairs drivers more than being drunk or high, and now it's illegal.
Excuse me, sir. May I have one of your Blowing Rock ales?
You're joking, right?
Come on, didn't your mother ever teach you to share?
Well, I don't mind sharing, but you're a squirrel. Shouldn't you be eating nuts or something?
You humans are all the same.
What do you know about Blowing Rock Ale?
Well, every brew is crafted with malted barley, hops, and mountain water.
I guess that makes sense. Come on down here, little guy.
Blowing Rock Ale, bringing the high country to adventure since 2008.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Hey, pass the nuts.
Back into the action with more Sports Out the Wazoo. Got an opinion? Email us at SOTWshow@gmail.com.
And welcome back to Sports Out the Wazoo, again sponsored by Capone's, located across from the Turchin Center. 265-1886 is the number for Capone's. Right now we're talking a little NFL talk after we got done stewing on the MLB season. And
yeah,
let me tell you, Steve Smith, Chris, had some comments today. And honestly, if I'm coming from a Panther fan's point of view,
it's a little bit scary.
Yeah, it's a little scary. I don't like what I hear.
Well, he was on WFNZ.
I'd rather him be punching Ken Lucas in the face, honestly.
Yeah, well,
sorry, Ken Lucas. You're a great guy.
He was on WFNZ the other day in Charlotte. And, I mean, he said some things. I think I understand what Steve said, but it – and I'm not trying to take it out of context, but I think it's one of those things you don't ever want to hear a player say. And he says, "Well, the thing is, everybody keeps saying a compliment receiver to me. I need a compliment to me. I don't want anyone to compliment me. I'm turning 31 years old. People can say I'm losing speed, yada yada yada, whatever. I would like a younger guy to come in and eventually take my spot. I don't want to be a number one anymore. I don't want to be a guy who can let go of something he's got to let go. I would like to be a guy that can go and play in the slot every day, and I would like some of these young guys to start doing some of the routes like I was doing for Moose and Ricky when I was a fresh-legged and when I didn't know what I was doing, and really start to develop and start handing over the torch." Look, and that's what, end quote, that's what Steve said. Look, I don't have a problem necessarily with where he's coming from, because I agree. But that's one of those things that you don't ever say. You don't ever go on record as a wide receiver.
I don't want to be a number one anymore.
It's one of those things that when it comes
like
up.
It's like a quarterback saying, "I don't want the ball in the final 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I wish somebody else would step in."
Or if you say that, you say it to a coach, or you say it to the administration.
Or maybe to like a younger guy. That could be a pep talk.
Yeah.
It's like, you need to step up and do something. I'm getting older. Somebody else is going to have to be the number one.
And it's one of those things that you don't make it public. And I understand what he's saying. I definitely agree with him, because is he capable of being a number one? Yeah, probably for a couple more years. He still can put up good numbers. It's hard to know what Steve Smith has got.
I think he can put up great numbers.
Yep.
He takes care of his body. I think he does a great job.
Oh, I like Moose.
He's got that chip on his shoulder, which has got him in trouble before. But honestly, I've thought about this a little bit, and obviously he didn't go about the right way of saying it. He had other ways that he could have said it. But honestly, Panther fans and the Panthers organization, Coach John Fox, whoever's the coach in the next 5 to 10 years, whoever's there, whoever's the GM for the Panthers, needs to think not only about finding a compliment for Steve Smith, which I've been barking about ever since Moosen left the first time, and still do, even though Moose is back. He's clearly declined. He's a third wide receiver at best, really, on this team now. But they've got to think of a compliment to Steve Smith and a big possession receiver. They've got to think of a new young receiver that he can tutor, and they have to think about life after Steve Smith. You saw what short-sightedness did with going with Jake Delhomme, saying, okay, this is – I know he's about 35, but we'll sign him to a five-year extension, and even though he just came out of Tommy John surgery, did not have a great year, we don't need to get backups. We don't need to do anything like that. A year later, they're in trouble.
Yeah.
This the same thing could happen to Steve Smith. What happens if his career ends? What happens if he shatters his leg or does something like he did against Green Bay a few years back when he broke his leg and he's out for the season? This receiving core is decimated. They don't have anybody.
You know what? You see, I'll disagree with you a little bit there. And I think the thing is, too, once again, I think it's hard to know what you have in Steve Smith when you had a quarterback who was constantly forcing in balls, who wasn't making good reads, who wasn't making good throws. And so I think we saw Matt Moore when he came in. And
he made that team better.
He wasn't staring down one wide receiver like Jake Delhomme did. He was going through his reads. He was going through his progressions. He was getting his checkdowns. But when he locked on to Steve Smith, he got Steve Smith the ball, and Steve Smith had monster games. And the opposite is true also of Dwayne Jarrett. Now, look, I know a lot of people – I'm not happy with Dwayne Jarrett because I think what we expected of him hasn't come true. But when you look at when Dwayne Jarrett has actually been thrown to, he's a very good wide receiver. And you actually saw the last two games of the year when he was active and when Matt Moore was throwing in the ball – he had great games. And I think it's hard to know. Dwayne Jarrett's not a number one. I don't even know if he's a number two, but he's capable of being a number two. He's definitely a number three in this league. And
I don't think he's capable of being a number one ever, but
I'm not saying that.
I do agree with a two or a three.
It's funny when you get a quarterback who's willing to actually get him the ball and not just give up on him like Jake Delhomme did.
And disperse the ball evenly. I mean, you saw Jeff King come alive really.
The guy I'm looking to this year, though, and a lot of people need to watch out for him, is Kenny Moore. Wake Forest grad who had a very, very good offseason last year. He blew out his leg, didn't get to play, and so or 2 years ago, actually, and then he came back this year. And the Panthers, they're not going to throw guys out. They're not going to throw four wide receiver sets out onto the field. If they do, one's a tight end. They're mixing it up out there. They put a running back in the slot. They're not going to get too crazy personnel-wise, so they're not going to carry four wide receivers. But Kenny Moore is a guy that, from what I've been understanding, from what I've been hearing from some of the beat writers in Charlotte, is that this guy, offseason workout-wise, has been going after it. He's set on being the guy for this team that steps up and has a great year this year.
Well, he set the Wake Forest record for most receptions. Most receptions
he's a real
by
talent.
Running back.
He reminds me of Steve Smith.
He's a running back, but he's kind of in Wake Forest's offense. He ran occasionally, but he's more out in the slots and out in the flats.
Right. That's how the Wake Forest offense works.
Yeah, that's
they
how
they
don't
really utilize a running back whenever you got a talent like that. You got to give him the ball somehow.
I think his senior year he had 96 receptions, and I think it was like second most in the ACC history or something like that, and most by a running back. So I mean this guy knows how to catch the ball. He's got reliable hands, and that's something that Wake Forest needs. I'm looking for them. I think Kenny Moore can have a big game. Dwayne Jarrett's got the body type, or a big season. Dwayne Jarrett's got the body type to be that number one receiver. Yeah. I don't think he has the talent or the hands right now. I'm going to give him one more year. He's already had, I think, 3 years now.
He's different to me than Kerry Colbert. I think Kerry Colbert was a guy who mentally wasn't ready. I think Dwayne Jarrett, at a point, he wasn't mentally ready. But Mohsin Mohammed spent all last year mentoring this guy. He said, look, I see a change in this guy. I see he's ready. Jake Delhomme said the same thing. The problem is you got to be committed to giving him a chance, and the Panthers weren't committed to him.
Well, yeah, he's kind of like a starting pitcher, like we said earlier. They're kind of a cranky bunch. Wide receivers are hard. There's hardly that for every Dwayne Bowe or whatever his name is that comes out of LSU and stuff and has a big season his rookie year. Right. There's at least 29, 30 other ones that you have to wait two, three, four, five years to really
people talk about quarterbacks all the time as being the position that's so fickle, and it's a coin toss when you draft them. Wide receivers right up there with a guy you never really know what you have.
NFL routes and NFL cornerbacks are a completely different bunch from college.
Yeah, it's really rare to be able to have a lock guy like a Calvin Johnson.
Well, especially right away.
I mean, is going to be able to impact your team significantly.
Yeah, normally that's a position that kind of gets groomed. And, you know, I think the Panthers are going to use their second-round pick.
I think they need to get a big possession receiver. They need to.
I honestly wouldn't be surprised if they go for more of an explosive player.
I was thinking they get somebody that can get down the field.
I think that really might stand out to them at two guys that I think might work well, that will be there in the second round. Marty Gilliard from Cincinnati, who's to me is Larry Fitzgerald light. He He's a little bit shorter than Larry Fitzgerald, but he's got that athletic ability. He can jump. He can run after the catch.
You've got that size. I really like that's the biggest thing.
Gilliard, I think, is going to be a player. I think the other guy, too, is Golden Tate. And Golden Tate has had a great, great pre-draft workout session, combine, all that stuff.
I hope he can make it to the second round. That's my only concern.
Yeah, he's elevated himself. So I think the Panthers, and I could see them maybe moving up and getting two second-round picks or maybe moving into the first to get somebody. I definitely think at least one of their picks are going to be
savvy
wide
drafters. They've sacrificed some of the future a little bit for the present by getting Jeff Otal and by getting Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo and stuff like that, giving up first-round draft picks. But you see, it's worked out. Yeah, I mean, look at all those draft picks.
They know what they're doing.
Well, you know what? They haven't really given up anything because they keep pushing it down the road. So people talk about last year, they gave up a future first-round pick. Well, they got it back the next year because they traded it. And if they continue to do that, I know it's tough to do that.
Eventually.
It's somebody else's problem.
But they're building a lot of talent. Yeah. And really, this team, I think, look out for this team because not only is it the John Fox John Fox is staying around. Everybody's kind of staying put this year as opposed to last year where all the coaches left. Right. Seemed like it was just mass exodus from Carolina. But also on top of that, obviously, you know, when John Fox has a subpar season, a 7-9, 8-8 season, he always comes back with a big season. But on top of that, there was a lot of injuries with Carolina's offensive line. There was a lot of injuries with D'Angelo missed games. And really, Matt Moore was in the quarterback. I think this team could be drastically improved. They could be one of the best teams in the NFC, if not possibly the best, with the defense that they had. They've got to put a little bit more together on the D-line, but they've got a very solid team.
The other interesting thing that Steve Smith said just about a week or so ago also was that he was kind of frustrated with what the team was doing and not in terms of not signing other guys. And I want to say this real quick because we're almost time to get out of here. I think it's putting the team in a weird situation. It's putting the players in a position to fail. It's putting the players in a position to be the enemy and be the villains to the fans because the ownership is saying, hey, we got plenty of talent. But in reality, are they setting up the players to have the best season they possibly can? Look, I think there's a balance there. I think you got to go young, but you also have to address some needs in free agency.
They've cut a lot of people. They've done a lot of cuts, but at the same time, they've gotten younger and they're going with the talent. They do a great job, Chris. You've mentioned it many times.
They're
before,
a great drafting team.
Of drafting. You got to be able to let that talent come in eventually. And
I
say,
agree.
All right, we're gonna wrap it up and really get rid of some of this cap room and then be able to use that in the draft and free agency later on down the road.
Yep.
See what you can get in the draft, then get into free agency trades.
That's exactly right. So if you're a Panthers fan, maybe reason to be optimistic, maybe reason to be a little bit scary with Steve Smith saying some of those comments. We're out of time. I hope everybody has a great Easter break. We'll be back, not on Monday because we'll be out, but we'll be back next Wednesday. If you miss us between shows, you can check us out on Twitter and Facebook. Head on over to wasurocks.com/sportsoutthewazoo, or you can check out the podcast as well to hold you over. Head on over to iTunes and in search with a keyword, Sports Out the Wazoo. You can check us out for there as well. For Brandon, Blake, Justin, and myself, no checklist today. Justin's been kind of busy. We'll see you guys next Wednesday. Have a great Easter.
Happy Easter. It's the blood of a champion.
You're listening to 90.5 WASU-FM Boone and around the world at WASURocks.com.